Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Professor Shub is a former executive director at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. Got that right this time. And he's Professor Emeritus of Virology at Wits University. Good afternoon, Professor.
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. We're having a lot of fun. You can hear us discussing all matters small from comic book characters. Now we have you here, we can discuss more serious things. We're of course talking about COVID-19, and today's topic is continuing surveillance once the epidemic curve comes down. What do we need to do? What should we do? Please tell us.
Right. Well, we're close to the stage where the epidemic is coming down. Fortunately, it is, and that's gratifyingly so. The parameters that we measure the epidemic, you know, the curve itself, the new daily cases, the test positivity, all those are looking very promising. But, of course, that's not the end of the story. The virus is still out there. Most of the population is susceptible, and many of the population are not behaving as they should behave. So a second wave really is almost inevitable. So the next steps is that what we need to do is to try and anticipate when, how, if, what the dimensions are of a second wave. And we need to put into place surveillance protocols. And we've got a subcommittee of the Minister's Advisory Committee that's looking at this, at various surveillance protocols, you know, to try and pick up early warning signs, early signs before the second wave takes off. So we can be prepared not only for the wave itself, but where it's going to be, to localize it. Because if we can localize it regionally, then we can put into place control measures to try and prevent it spreading. You know, contact trace and testing and so on, getting healthcare resources ready and so on. So there are two main surveillance instruments that we can use and that are being planned. The one of them is to look for antibodies. You know, antibodies are the proteins you make when you recover from the infection. And that'll tell us how many people have been infected in the past. So we do it on serum. You know, serum is the liquid part of the blood. And that's called serosurveillance or serological surveillance. And we can get these blood samples either what we call convenience samples. These are samples of blood which come from clinical laboratories. Of course, they come anonymously. All identifiers are removed for ethical reasons. And so that will kind of tell us about people who go to a clinical laboratory because they're not well. So it's that kind of population. Or specimens who are sent in for antenatal, as part of the antenatal checkup. Again, healthy, but of course only women. Men don't normally go for antenatal. And then we can use blood bank specimens, people that go and donate blood. It's also a certain skewed part of the population. So convenient samples are, as the name implies, convenient, to look for serosurveillance, or we can do what you call structured sampling, where we actually plan to get samples of the population which are representative geographically, ethnic race-wise, age-wise, etc. And that will give us, in terms of antibody, a sort of overall picture of what the degree of susceptibility is, and also we do it prior to when there is going to be a second outbreak. It may give us, well, early warning signs if there's an increase in antibodies that there isn't an impending second wave. That's the one thing, either looking for antibodies. The second is to look for the virus itself, what you call viral surveillance. And that we can do one of two ways, either random testing. So we randomly test the population. If the people, of course, got clinical symptoms, they will be tested anyway. But otherwise, do random testing to see if we can pick it. That's a little bit of a kind of canon approach. The other way is actually an intriguing way, and that is wastewater surveillance, or what you call sewage surveillance. You know, up to 40% of people that are infected will excrete the virus in the stool. And that, of course, you can pick it up in untreated wastewater or sewage. And that, of course, is very easy to access. There are also no ethical problems because it's a sewage. And in fact, sewage surveillance is not new. It's been used for sampling or surveilling things like, for example, poliovirus, or other viruses, other bacteria as well, typhoid and so on, where they get samples from untreated wastewater or sewage. And there are various techniques of concentrating it down And there are some laboratories in the country which are very experienced in doing this. Of course, they haven't done it for COVID yet. So we need to just plug it in. There need to be some technical modifications. But that's a very good way. And then, of course, if we're in the silent phase, when this curve comes down, that will give us a good indication before the second wave kicks in. Because then we'll start picking up virus in that material. So these are the kind of surveillance projects or surveillance systems which are going to be put into place to try and anticipate a second wave. Of course, South Africa is not the only country. Many countries are doing this. But it will be a very valuable thing, hopefully, to try and anticipate a second wave before it occurs, so we can be prepared for it.
Well, it's fascinating, Professor, because it's a mix of different statistical techniques. I would imagine you've outlined quite comprehensively the different ways that you can monitor and test for the virus. And
right.
And there's obviously pros and cons. I would imagine, I don't know, I'm probably using other viruses like the HIV virus as a reference point, but maybe it's cheaper to test for the antibodies with the serology than to test for the virus directly. There might be someone more statistically robust. Like you said, the convenience samples, people come in, but that's not random. That's obviously self-selected. It's,
yeah.
Like you said, men don't go for antenatal and healthy people don't go to the hospital on a whim, well, now that the panic's passed, to test for the virus.
Well, blood donor samples, of course, are from healthy donors.
Yes. And
but again, it is a skewed population. It's the blood donor population.
Yes.
Well, that's a disadvantage of convenience. But, of course, structured is a lot more expensive. It's a lot more challenging to kind of set up that system. Actually, what I haven't talked about, of course, is the modeling. Now, all this data then gets fed in. And then the modelers, the mathematical modelers, then do their predictions. So what I spoke about is really getting the data to feed to the people to do the analysis.
Right. And then, so the one question which occurs to me, and I don't know if it's possible to answer, and it might vary from technique to technique, but how geographically disaggregated can we go? Obviously, everyone's been hearing about the testing and tracing plan from government. And
right.
Obviously, we want to be proactive. We want to stop another wave before it begins. But we also want to take the scalpel and not the hammer approach. If we can say, well, it's not even just this province or this municipality, but it's this sub-region. You know, Johannesburg is divided into all these zones. Then we don't have to, say, restrict interprovincial travel. We don't have to go back into a hard lockdown if we can identify. How fine-tuned is all of this work?
Yeah, you know, it what really happens in the early stages of the epidemic – and presumably the early stage of a second wave, is that it'll go around how accurate one can identify a source of infection.
Yes.
In other words, if an individual, in the early days when the infection came from travelers, it was relatively easy because you could identify travelers who were infected and then sample their contacts, do that contact trace around those imported cases. The second wave is going to be a little bit more difficult, but I guess the same kind of idea, in other words, to try and identify or try and pinpoint, as far as one can pinpoint, a source of infection, and then kind of around that, the kind of ring of individuals of contacts around that. Now, how wide that's going to be will really depend on how early one is, how early one gets in to that source of infection. Obviously, if it's delayed, then there are going to be far more contacts because then it's spread. Then the contacts are the contacts that need to be followed up.
Mm.
But regionally, even with the first wave, we were hoping to have hot spots, but that soon disappeared. The virus is very infectious and it spreads rapidly. So the hot spots became very diffuse after a while and then became provincial.
Right. And we can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. We didn't get on top of the local transmission. So here we are now. I would imagine not knowing the details technically that, the technique you spoke about, quite interesting and unusual if you've heard about it for the first time. But as you said, it's had its history to test untreated sewage you'd think is relatively cheap and also makes it easier to geographically pinpoint. I would imagine you can probably isolate certain samples to a neighborhood or to a ward or some.
No, correct. I think it's got a lot of advantages because it's quite easy to do, or relatively easy to do. The specimen's readily available. And again, you can identify the geographical source where the feeder material comes into. Well, and it's been tried and tested. The actual technology is not totally new.
Right. So it's something we can look at. Obviously, the nature of the virus complicates some of these things. The relatively long incubation period, or the asymptomatic carriers,
and the pre-symptomatic.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's fascinating stuff. We must continue, as you keep reminding us, as Louis Karpus keeps reminding us, to wash our hands. We just continue to be careful. We continue to play it safe.
You want to try and not have a second wave if at all possible. And that's going to depend on human behavior.
So everyone out there, Chai FM land, remember to stay safe, to practice safe hygiene, social distancing, eat your garlic, try and repel people who are too overeager to be in your space. Professor Barry Shroop, thank you so much once again for making time to be with us on a regular daily basis. And we're going to catch up with you again next week, Monday, same time, for another edition of the COVID-19 update.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you very much. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Have a great weekend.